Hare Krishna. For the second of the discussions on the mental devotion. So last week we discussed the preface, and this week we discussed the introduction. A summary of what we did last week is that in the preface, Srila Prabhupada gave a history of the mental devotion and described its purpose, basically to elevate everyone to the platform of pure devotional service and to educate about Bhakti Ras, or the tasting the transcendental mellows of pure devotional service. And in that description, the preface, Srila Prabhupada gave, in order to understand the gurus of Bhakti Ras, he gave a description of the defects of mundane Ras, which is that it is chapla sukha, and that's temporary and unsatisfying. That was a discussion there, and this week we discussed the introduction, which basically gives invokes auspiciousness. It establishes the objective of the book, which is Sri Krishna. There is offering obeisances, of course, to the spiritual masters, the Vaishnavas, the Supreme Lord, in order to remove obstacles in writing this book. And also, there is a definition of pure devotional service. So actually, I was shown, there's another book here, this one's called The Ways of Devotion. Anyone seen that one?
Yeah.
Very good book. It's by Damodara Swami. It describes a comprehensive study of the nectar devotion. So that's a very good book because he compares the original text of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, written by Rupa Goswami, to Prabhupada's summary study of that in the Nectar Devotion. Helps to relate certain paragraphs of Prabhupada's Nectar Devotion to the actual verses of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. As Prabhupada pointed out, if he had commented and just written everything that was there in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, instead of being 400 pages in the Nectar Devotion, it would have been thousands. So he's done a summary. Everything, the essence is there. And Prabhupada describes it actually, the Nectar Devotion is the all the conclusive statements about pure devotional service in the kingdom of Bhakti are found there in the Nectar Devotion. One doesn't have to look anywhere else. So, but I thought I'd bring those books in there to show. This is a two-volume set, and that was, I think, it was translated that by Damodara Swami. And it has the full commentary by Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. What's that?
Is that separate from the actual Nectar Devotion that Prabhupada translated?
This is the original text by Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's a two-volume set. Srila Prabhupada has summarized that as the Nectar Devotion. So, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally instructed Rupa Goswami for 10 days at the Dasavatara Ghat in Prayag, and those teachings he has compiled in his various books, the first major work being the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, which is the science of pure devotional service and pure love of God. We also discussed last week the six different purposes for learning and teaching the nectar devotion. Can anyone remember some of those? To raise the neophyte, anyone actually, anyone, Prabhupada says, everyone through the nectar devotion can be raised to the platform of Goswami. And we had a little bit of a discussion on that, with the understanding that, of the four classes, fourth class, third class, first class human beings, Sudras, Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, Brahmanas. By reading the Nectar Devotion, by studying and practicing it, one can be elevated to the platform of first class. So, by becoming a Vaishnava, one becomes as good as a Brahmana. Amongst Brahmanas, there are Grihastha, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Brahmaprastha, and Sannyas Brahmanas, of which the Sannyas is the first class Brahmana. So one, not only can one be elevated to being equal with Brahmana, but one can be equal with a first class Brahmana, with Goswami. Because one becomes a Vaishnava, one becomes has the same qualifications. In fact, by becoming a Vaishnava, one actually can have qualifications that exceed even the qualifications of the Goswami. So that is one reason. There's five others. I mentioned one of them. I mentioned another one before. Bhakti Ras, to teach the science of Bhakti Ras, right? The concept of the taste of pure devotional service, to elevate one from the material platform to the spiritual platform by giving practical hints of, you know, what to do in one's daily life. So there's practical information: do this, don't do that, and that helps one to be, although situated in the material world, beyond the spiritual platform by practically understanding what to do and what not to do. To teach and stimulate our original love for Krishna, being situated in one of the five different transcendental mellows. To teach the science of loving every living entity perfectly. So by developing one's love for God, one also loves all other living entities. And the sixth one was to nurture the devotional life of those engaged in the Krishna consciousness movement. So there are different statements. Nectar devotion is although it can elevate everyone to the platform, to the highest platform, is specifically meant for devotees. And especially those who have taken first initiation, it's a real must to read Nectar Devotion. As we mentioned last week, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used to instruct his disciples when they took initiation, Diksha initiation, that now they must read the Nectar Devotion in order to understand Bhaktisiddhanta properly. So it does particularly nourish those who are already engaged within the Krishna consciousness. Actually, Nectar Devotion, we're also describing how Srila Prabhupada said that we should we should repeatedly, over and over again, and very thoroughly read books, four books in particular, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar Devotional, Srimad Bhagavatam. Before devotees start reading other different literatures, they really should have read these at least one, they should have read them thoroughly. And then other different literatures they may want to read, they should read after that. We'll discuss that a bit later. So Prabhupada wanted us to read over and over again, and he was describing that if we actually study the Nectar Devotion, we're directly associating with Srila Rupa Goswami. And if we implement the instructions that Rupa Goswami gives, then we're actually worshipping his lotus feet. So that was that's the summary of what we did last week. This week, as we said, in the different verses of the introduction of the Nectar Devotion, actually correspond to some of the they're actually the initial verses of the Bhakti of Samyutta Sindhi. So the introduction in Srila Prabhupada's book and part of chapter 1 is actually chapter 1 from the Bhakti of Samyutta Sindhi, where Srila Rupa Goswami sets the objective of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu or Nectar Devotion as Krishna. So he defines that that's the objective for learning this book. There's some of these verses, of course, they're in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and of course, you can also find the original discussion. Parts of it, the essence of it, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Madhyalila 8th chapter, verse 142, it actually describes, it's got this first verse of the Nectar Devotion. It says, Akila Rasamrita Murti Prasmara Ruchi Ruha Karaka Pali Karita Samala Lito Radha Prayam Vidhu Jayati. Let Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, be glorified. So there's the objective of Nectar Devotion there. By virtue of his expanding attractive features, he subjugated the gopis named Palika and Pali and absorbed the minds of Shama and Lalita. He is the most attractive lover of Srimati Radharani and is the reservoir of pleasure for devotees in all transcendental mellows. So that particular part of that slogan, Akila Rasamrita Murti, you hear that quoted a lot throughout Srila Prabhupada's lectures and what have you. It means that Krishna is a reservoir of pleasure for all devotees in all transcendental mellows. For instance, we have that verse in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that says that the various groups of people in the arena, this is at Maharaj Yudhisthira's Yajna, regarded Krishna in different ways when he entered it with his elder brother. The wrestlers saw Krishna as a lightning bolt, the men of Mathura as the best of males, the women as Cupid in person, the cowherd men as their relative, the impious rulers as a chastiser, his parents as their child, the king of the bhojas as death, the unintelligent as the supreme lord's universal form, the yogis as the absolute truth, and the brijanis as their supreme worshipful deity. And if you look at the commentaries on that particular verse, you see that it's actually describing the five direct rasas or relationships, mellows of relationship that one can have with Krishna, plus the indirect, the seven indirect relationships. So that is the objective. That, Nectar Devotion is we're trying to develop a relationship with, to understand and to please Krishna, develop our love, pure love for Krishna, who is actually the reservoir of all transcendental, pleasurable, loving relationships. So, the introduction defines the objective of the book, offers obeisances to the sources of inspiration, so therefore you'll see that Srila Rupa Goswami will offer respectful obeisances to the Lord and to his spiritual masters and to his elder brother Sanatana Goswami. There you see that Srila Rupa Goswami, he offers prayers that may Sanatana Goswami be pleased with this word. And in one lecture I was reading how Srila Prabhupada was describing that when a devotee does something, when they preach or speak about Krishna or write transcendental literatures or do anything, they actually do it for the pleasure of the devotees in Krishna. They don't do it for the pleasure of the non-devotees. You find that we have seen different groups, such as in New Zealand, they had the Harry Bowls. Anyone come across the Harry Bowls? Yeah. The Siddha Swarup, in their Transcendental Adventure, the biography of Srila Prabhupada in Australia and New Zealand, you see that one of his disciples, Siddha Swarup, not exactly splintered off, because there's no real such thing as a splinter group. You're either part of it or you're separate. But so he sort of separated, formed his own group, which is still going now, so Harry Bowles. But they started wearing non-devotional clothes, growing their hair long and introducing worship of Jesus. They tried to sort of cater, because they felt that, by doing the things we do as devotees, which are actually mentioned in the Nectar Devotion, rules and regulations, by following them, you can alienate people. And therefore, there are a few groups like that. Hare Krishnas that have, don't like the rules and regulations and think that it's, in order to attract people, they have to, compromise these and act in such a way that the non-devotees will be pleased, and then thinking that the non-devotees will be pleased, they'll come and join the movement. But of course, by understanding the mind of the non-devotee, you can understand that they will never be pleased. First it will be non-devotional clothes, and then it will be, we must worship Jesus and demigods as well, and we must have, we should be able to take a certain occasion in moderation, and we should be able to do this, and gradually it'll become nothing. So Srila Rupa Goswami has written Nectar Devotion to please Sanatana Goswami, knowing that that will please the Vaishnavas and the Supreme Lord, and that's actually how the devotee performs their activities. So he offers his obeisances as a source of inspiration. Because, again, Srila Sanatana Goswami wrote the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Has anyone seen that? We actually, I've got a copy at home. It's about 8 volumes or something. Each book is about that thick. So, the details, the practical details of the rules and regulations of devotional service. And Srila Rupa Goswami describes in his Nectar Devotion that Sanatana Goswami has described very elaborately all the details, and Nectar Devotion actually deals more with the principles. So although we still do have certain amount of details, it's much more principle information and principle details. For instance, there might be one of the items of devotional services that one must take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. It's a principle. There are many, many details involved in that one statement, which are elaborately described in Sanatana Goswami's Harikati Vilas. But here, Rupa Goswami is dealing with principles, and therefore, again, we can see the connection between Rupa Goswami offering the obeisances to his elder brother Sanatana Goswami, wanting to please him by summing up the essence of his studies and writings in Hari Bhakti Vilas, and not deviating from that as well. So we've discussed defining the objective of the book, offering obeisances to the sources of inspiration, and offering benedictions that the Nectar Devotional Service will spread throughout the world and inundate everyone in auspiciousness. That's the benediction. Now, in Srila Prabhupada's introduction, of course, he touches on, even on that previous point, Srila Prabhupada gives a couple of very important analogies. As we know, it's always good to note where the analogies are, to jot them down, because sometimes they come up in tests and exams like that. There's two important analogies here. One is the analogy of the sharks in the ocean, and the other is the analogy of the volcanoes in the middle of the ocean. So, the analogy of the sharks in the ocean, of course, is that they're generally... generally, the sharks remain in the ocean, although in Kali Yuga they actually go into the rivers and bite people. Generally, they remain in the ocean, because there's usually plenty of food in the ocean, but because we have we're destroying the food sources of the sharks, and they actually having to come up the rivers and eat swimmers and what have you. But generally they stay in the ocean and they're not concerned with the rivers. When the shark has the entire ocean, wonderful food supply and what have you, then there's no need for it to go into the smaller areas of water, smaller food sources. And those rivers are compared to the other different processes of liberation which actually lead to the ocean of bhakti. So one is actually tasted the nectar of the ocean of devotional service. It is not interested in the rivers or the other processes that lead to that. They're inferior. And then, as far as the volcanoes in the middle of the ocean, that analogy there is describing that may the Lord and Sanatana Goswami protect us from the arguments of other philosophers who may want to argue that against bhakti in so many different ways, and he's describing that. Because this nectar devotion is an ocean of bhakti, it is so powerful, the arguments in the nectar devotion, the scriptural references are so conclusive and so authoritative that anyone tries to argue against it and it's like a little volcanic eruption in the middle of an ocean. Now, it's an interesting analogy because a volcanic eruption would cause a massive amount of damage. But when it's in the ocean, it doesn't actually cause much disturbance to the ocean itself. So others who hear these arguments against bhakti, who are not well versed in the nature of devotion, those arguments can destroy their spiritual life. But for a devotee who understands the nature of devotion, those arguments, you know, as powerful as they may be, are no match for the mind of the ocean. That's the analogy there. The shark analogy, you have to listen to the tape. Or you have to come and say more. Okay. I'll move on. So, also, Shivarupa Goswami describes the four different sides. He gives an analysis of the contents of the nectar devotion. We discussed this a little bit last week, that there are four, it's compared to an ocean, and an ocean has four sides, north, south, east and west. And then each of those sides, as we know, there are different waves, big waves, principal waves. So the one of the questions which as we go through week to week, there's always two questions in the list of contents which can be answered. Because I've been a little bit busy, I haven't put them on the net, although I did announce them last week, or last Thursday. If you're not sure, just answer both of them. They're really good. You know, we can do the generic ones, which are sort of general information, but especially the content questions, of which there are two, it's really good practice. Even if I only set one, you're better off to try and answer the both of them. They sum up specific things that you really should have picked up in your reading. For instance, one of them was, what are the four sides of the ocean? What do they correspond to? And of course, the four sides of the ocean is the east, south, north, west. They actually correspond to the four sections of the nectar devotion, which is the varieties of devotional service. Then there's the general symptoms of transcendental mellows. And then there's the primary loving relationships. And then there's the indirect loving relationships. You see on page 409 of your nectar devotion, right at the back there, that is all described very nicely, set out. What's that?
Which piece?
409. Has everyone got that? That. A lot of people don't realise that's there because they don't ever get to the end of the book. That's because I let you in on a little secret now. So, in our studies, we're doing the eastern side of the ocean and the four waves. That takes us up to chapter 19. Someone asked me last week, because it was, do we do the other chapters? And we don't actually do them. So it should either be done with Bhakti Sarvabhauma, which is in conjunction with Chaitanya Charitamrita, or it should be done with Bhaktivedanta in conjunction with the last six cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, somewhere there, which is a really good deal for those subjects. So we do the four sections, of course, is Samangya Bhakti, which is the general symptoms of devotional service, beginning in this lesson. Rupa Goswami gives a definition of pure devotional service, and then there is Sadhana Bhakti, the different rules and regulations of practical devotional service on the platform of devotional service and awe and reverence, Vaidhi Bhakti, and then there is Rava Bhakti, gradually coming to the point of ecstatic devotional service on the spontaneous platform. One who has become perfect in their sadhana, they're able to basically means they become pure and come to the level of pure devotional service. They're able to take up spontaneous devotional service and even experience ecstatic transcendental emotions. Although it should be understood that Raghunuga Bhakti doesn't, spontaneous devotional service doesn't begin in Bhava Bhakti, it actually begins in Sadhana Bhakti. Although one may be practicing the rules and regulations of Sadhana Bhakti, the Sadhana Bhakta also has the opportunity to begin cultivating spontaneous loving devotional service. It's not that it's just a prerogative of those on the platform of Bhava Bhakti. It can begin when one is free from material desire. But at the platform of Nishtha, where a devotee is 60-70% fixed up as a devotee and maybe 30-40% of some bad habits, some things in the heart, but the difference, because a devotee is on the platform of Nishtha, steady devotional service, because they don't actually act upon the contamination that's there in the heart, previous to that, the contamination within the heart affects their ability to perform devotional service quite strongly, whereas the devotee is fixed up, the contamination is still there to some degree, but it no longer affects them, they still go on with their devotional service, and they just sort of ignore, by the force of their constant activity and constant meditation, the contamination there within the heart doesn't actually affect them, and therefore they're actually eligible to also taste that platform of spontaneous devotional service.
So Samanya Bhakti is the beginning, and then Sadhana Bhakti comes, and then Bhava?
Now Samanya Bhakti is more like a summary of pure devotional service. What are we talking about? And then as we get into Sadhana Bhakti, okay, now how to practice it. So, the first part is to just understand what pure devotional service is. And to do that, he's given some of his principal characteristics. First, what is pure devotional service as opposed to ordinary devotional service? And then one who takes up that process and practices it, what are the benefits that they will derive?
That's when it becomes sadhana.
Becomes sadhana when we actually practice it. So that is sadhana.
And it's samanya when you talk about it.
Yes, it's, yeah, the general characteristics, yeah. So there, you know, this whole Eastern Wave is under the heading of varieties of devotional service. So we have first just discussing the characteristics of what that devotional service is, then discussing the three different levels of devotional service, Sadhana Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti, and then rising to the platform of, you know, spontaneous devotional service, Bhava Bhakti, or even getting little glimpses of that, even for the Sadhana Bhakti sometimes, because it's described that we hear in the list of how to execute devotional service that there are 64 different items. That is an expansion of the 9 different items of devotional service, rather than kirtana, smaran, avasevana, asana, pranayama, asana, sankirtana. So there are 9 different processes of devotional service. You expand that, you get 64 items, which is mentioned here in the Nectar Devotion. And some of those, like arjuna, can be expanded into another 64. And then you'll get a bunch of the deep, which describes that. But of the 9 different processes of devotional service, or the 64 items of devotional service mentioned under the category of Sadhana Bhakti, there are 5 which stand out as particularly powerful, which Maharaj discussed at his initiation lecture yesterday morning: chanting Hare Krishna, associating with devotees, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, the association of devotees, residing in a holy place, or meditating upon residing in a holy place, and worshipping the deity, which is sometimes mentioned as worshipping Tulsi, which is an item of worship. Those 5 are so powerful that they can actually give symptoms of ecstasy even in a neophyte devotee. So even, you know, those who are seriously taking up devotional service, and especially those 5 items, they will get, you know, some taste of ecstasy, and therefore, you know, they can understand and appreciate the symptoms which are described there in that next southern side, Samanya Bhagavad Bhakti Ras, or the general symptoms of transcendental mellow. And so that will apply to, you know, the Sadhana Bhaktis, Bhaktis, the Bhava Bhaktis and the Prema Bhaktis. And then of course you have the western side, which describes the 5 primary loving relationships, the 5 primary rasas, which we have neutrality, Santa Rasa, Dasya Rasa, which is servitorship, we have Sakya Rasa, which is friendship, Vatsali Rasa, which is parental, and Naduri Rasa, which is conjugal. They're the 5 primary relationships. Again, you know, there's a general understanding of these things in the section that we will discuss in our Bhakti Shastri. Further detail for greater understanding is explained in that section, the science of it, so that, you know, what is and what is not in those categories. And then of course there's the northern side, which gives the indirect loving relationships, and there is at the end there a discussion on perverted expressions of loving relationship, and also mixing different moods that are incompatible with us. You know, it's like sitting before your mother on Valentine's Day and reciting, you know, some romantic poetry, there's something wrong there. It just doesn't, you know, it's a rush about it. So that's, you know, Rupa Goswami in his introduction, he actually describes those, and Srila Prabhupada summarizes them. But now you know where to look for more further information. And of course, finally, there's a definition of pure devotional service. Who knows that verse that Prabhupada is plugging in that introduction? That should be mentioned as, is it 1111? Yeah, and then 1112. Yeah. So both of those are mentioned in the in this introduction. They're in your book. It's got the Sanskrit there and the translations. If you want to look them up in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll find in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, chapter 19, verse 167. So that's got, you know, all the word for word and the translation that most of us will be used to, and of course the beautiful third book by Srila Prabhupada. And the other one, which is Sarvapadi Vinyamuktam, Tatparatvena Niyamalam, Rishikena Rishikesha, Sevanam Bhaktiya Uchate. And that's mentioned in first verse, so you should learn those, of course. Again, they're the sort of thing that can be included in the test. They're important, those two. That first one. And Yadirati Sunyam Gyanatimadina Vitam Anukulyena Krishna Nu Silanam Bhakti Uttama. When first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires. Knowledge obtained by the mystic philosophy and fruit of action. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favourably as Krishna desires. Generally, a little bit of information there, that within that verse there are Shrut Lakshana, or primary characteristics of pure devotional service. There are three which are mentioned. One is that devotional services for Krishna. Second is that devotional service is an active engagement, and devotional service is executed with favourable intent. So those three items, you see that Srila Prabhupada discusses them at length in his introduction. And he gives different examples. So it must be for Krishna. Must be active engagement, and it must be executed with favourable intent. It's active engagement. The third one is that it's executed with favourable intent. So, secondary characteristics are described as anivalasa-sunyam. It's free from ulterior motive. And the second one is yama-kanadhyana-vrittam, which means pure devotional service is not covered by philosophical and fruited results. So, in particular, the first three, they describe devotional service. It's meant to please Krishna, it's active service, and it's executed with favourable intent. The secondary characteristics distinguish pure devotional service from ordinary devotional service. That there's no ulterior motive, and it's not covered by fruitive activity for the soul. So devotional service in general may have those first. Someone is trying to, there's some desire to please Krishna, and there's some activity, it's a favour of the time, but it still remains in the category of ordinary devotional service if there's some ulterior motive or if it's covered by activities connected with fruitive activity and philosophical speculation. Any questions on that? So that's that verse, understanding that. And of course the whole nectar devotion, that is that thesis there is the key verse of the nectar devotion, which is the basis of the whole book. Very, very important verse. Knowing that, you see Srila Prabhupada preached Krishna consciousness all over the world, and he had to, many people would come to him who also felt that they were serving God in many different ways. But armed with that verse, he was able to very clearly point out to them and be fixed in the understanding of what is pure service and what is not. I heard a lecture the other day with someone, Prabhupada was speaking about pure devotional service, and someone said, well, what about other religions? And Srila Prabhupada explained to her that in order to become educated in the science, in any science, one must attend the particular level of education required. Right? So it's like saying, for instance, if someone's talking about the university where they did, the PhD and what have you, and learned the medical science, And then someone says, well, what about my school? I go to East Melbourne Primary. Is that, you know, is that, that's like what that statement, you know, what about other religions? In order to study that level of medicine, you have to go to that, you know, you have to, someone must be teaching that level of knowledge. It's not sufficient just to say, yes, I'm getting an education. So why distinguish against me? So people say, yes, we also love God. We have our religion. We have our process. That's fine. It is a very general statement. But specifically, okay, let's look at it. Is that level of religion, you know, at this level, with the definition of pure devotional service, that it is, you know, directed towards God with favourable intent. There is, you know, some actual activity going on. It's not that we're just sitting down and doing nothing. And that it is, there's no ulterior motive involved, in which case it's not service to God, but it's actually service to ourselves. And, of course, you know, the symptom of there being ulterior motive is that there will be fruit of activity or mental speculation. Right? Whenever there's fruit of activity, means there's some ulterior motive, there's some material desires. And philosophical speculation means there's ulterior motive in the form of very subtle material desires. So when there's no activity like that, that helps us understand there's no ulterior motive. And then that active service directed favorably towards the Supreme Lord is pure. That's a very nice definition. Srila Prabhupada then backs that up with, or Srila Rupa Goswami then gives another definition from the Radha Muni, which is a particularly important verse as well, describing that, again, it's a very, you know, it's elaboration in one sense on that first part, that really in order to be on that platform of pure devotional service, one has to see the Lord as the master of the senses and engage in the service of the Lord of the senses. And in order to, one cannot do that if one thinks that one has some other particular identification. So either one sees oneself as the eternal servant of the Supreme Lord, and he is the master of our senses, or we see ourselves as the servant of the family, the nation, our dog, you know, the mind, the senses. Right? So if we have some other identification with the body, or that in relationship to the body, we will serve those things, and therefore it's not possible to be situated in exclusive service to the Supreme Lord. So that is. Any questions or comments? Alright, so what we'll do now is a little exercise on just a especially because this is describing pure devotional service. And pure devotional service, of course, means just executing the will of Krishna. And Krishna states very clearly in the Bhagavad Gita that one who teaches, preaches, spreads his teachings, then there is no one more dear to him. So he describes it. And it's mentioned here also in the purport of the Nectar Devotion that you see, Srila Prabhupada describes that. Service to the Supreme Lord is speaking about his glories. He mentions that as kirtan. Now, but even that can be done in a method which is not pure devotional service, and that's what we want to discuss. Thank you. to write. Relate. Someone who can write clearly, big letters. And we'll rush it once. You made the mistake of looking at me and writing so high. So you're it. It's like being on an Indian train, right? You get a seat and you don't look. Someone gets on the train and they're looking, you know. Is there a space between you two? You don't look. No. As soon as you look, you acknowledge, oh, there may be space. Oh. So, you made that mistake. I'll ask you a question. Let's just do some brainstorming. Two questions. What are some of the symptoms of someone who's preaching, Krishna consciousness, but you know, and the external behaviour shows that there's some motivation, and the same question that they're doing that, and you know, what would be the symptoms of their internal thinking? Be able to understand and know that there's some ulterior motive and motivation there. So we'll think about that and then we'll write some of those on the board. Someone thinks of one, they can, you know, call it out, we'll put it up as the others do. Okay. We want examples. Now they can be from within ISKCON or out of ISKCON of people who, you know, teach the message of the Lord. But it's an example of something which is not pure devotion service. In other words, there's some ulterior motive there, and how it would manifest externally in the behaviour, or how it may manifest internally in their
you're saying that they're preaching others,
yep,
to non-devotees and turning them into devotees. But they have an ulterior motive behind that.
Yes. Yeah. And we want to know, what are the external symptoms by which we can recognize it, and you know, what are the things that sometimes they would be thinking, by which we can recognize through their thought process.
They could be preaching simple living, but they by themselves living lavishly.
Okay, so in other words, they're preaching, you know, some principle, but they're not following it themselves. In fact, they're disobeying it, right? So they're not following or even disobeying the principles that they're teaching. Write that question down. So where is the ulterior motive in that? So we'll look at those and then perhaps whoever suggested it might be able to answer that. So we'll put your name beside that.
Yeah, I mean, like, they can say
what they... Pat about his name. We'll give you a chance. Any others?
They could be doing so to please Krishna, but in return, that Krishna would fulfill some of them's desires.
Yeah, yeah. So they want some remuneration?
Yes.
Yeah, some material remuneration? So they're affected by the results of by the material results of their preaching, you know, in the way of pride or disappointment.
They
might be
doing it for the name, I think.
Yeah, so that's. So put that one as well, because it's similar but not exactly the same. So, you know, that they're preaching for the name and the fame. Probably a good idea to jot these down too.
What about some of them may intend to preach? I don't know, maybe for fame or.
Yes, that is there for name and fame.
Yeah, but they also force to take up that.
Okay, so trying to gather a lot of followers.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can put that there. Yeah. And again, you know, along those lines, sometimes people may want to, you know, establish big temples, you know, so we can put that there, you know, big things that sort of, it looks like preaching, but something that keeps their glories going, that they've established so many temples, or this big temple. Written so many books, you know, so they know that sometimes one of the names, sometimes people, you know, that they want to be recognised for writing books, many books, or. Another one you could put is. Teaching the message of God but avoiding the important principles. Prabhupada mentions that so many people who will speak in the Bhagavad Gita and yet they'll speak so many different things, they'll write so many books. They'll get many, many followers and what have you, but practically none of them will tell people that they should surrender to Krishna. That part, they always do that. Which is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. So it's sort of, for instance, you know, the Transcendental Meditation Group, which were very, very big and very popular. I think in some parts of the world they still are. And I don't know what they're doing now, but previously they used to just teach the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. They didn't teach the other 12. So. And many of their disciples, their followers, are usually quite shocked when they understand that there's actually more to the Bhagavad Gita than those six chapters they're taught. So it's a mission of the, you know, important points, even though they're thinking. Any others? There's one we mentioned the other day, last Thursday, that we specifically relate to this class, of course. One of the regular principles which Rupa Goswami describes under Sadhana Bhakti is that one, a devotee should not be, you know, very eager to establish many big temples or to write, you know, volumes of books. Another principle is that one should not be eager to read too many books. And now, the understanding there is that, as we described before, Srila Prabhupada many, many times stressed in letters, lectures, and in his purports that one need only read Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Nectar Devotion. Not reading too many books means that devotees should be thoroughly versed in those books, and when they give classes, either, you know, within the temples or to the congregation, or they're, you know, teaching anyone or like that, they should principally study those books, teach those books, like that. What can happen is that devotees who may want to impress others will sometimes read books where there may be some, you know, very attractive stories and you know interesting points and what have you, which are certainly related, you know, they're certainly from the Krishna conscious literature, but they're basically not so much attempting to train the devotees properly in the principles of devotional service as to impress someone with their class or their discussion. And that's how that can show out. When devotees don't take the trouble to become fixed in these four liturgies and systematically teach them to the devotees. If they're not doing that, and at the same time they're speaking many, many things, you know, which seem to be very impressive and what have you, it's actually going directly against your Prabhupada's instructions. And that's what Rupa Goswami means by not reading too many books, you know, just to impress people. It's not that if one, of course, is very thoroughly versed in those books, then, you know, that those four principal books, then there's no harm in, you know, supplementing one's understanding of those literatures and reading other advice and other literatures. So we'll go on. Any others to go on board? Yeah. So let's discuss some of these. Alright, and you were going to explain this one. How does disobeying the principles that they are prescribing, in what way does it reveal that they're motivated?
They might be telling you money, like you should not be having whatever you are in, you have to give back the money and you should not be keeping donations. Something like they might be encouraging them, but they might be using that money which has been given donated to live their life lavishly instead of using it for the right purpose. One motive could be that when they are preaching.
Cheating people out of it.
I heard one more example just now about Haribol group in New Zealand, where in fact they were in, from Scone, they had the person they had started with the preaching the aims and Scone, but later on they have made their own, they manipulated the rules and regulations so that they can attract more people and in that way.
To attract a lot of followers. That's right. So you're discussing this point?
Yeah.
So although they're not following is that an example of not following? How is that an example of not following what they're prescribing?
Because they don't, because when they were taught, when some of the knowledge is given, actually from the expert, after changing this thing, they manipulated or they changed according to their own convenience of protecting more people.
Is that more. Affected by the results and the disappointment because thinking that people are not becoming devotees, they become affected like that and they change things. The other thing, you know, is that they're disobeying the principles which we're prescribing, or Rupa's mind is prescribing, but then they prescribe a different watered down philosophy, which is surprising how much that goes on. Especially, you know, in the beginning, but even in later years, it's still a little bit there. I'm surprised. But certainly, you know, not amongst the mature devotees. But I guess that is a sign of mature devotees that they're not doing that. It's an interesting one, that one. It manifests in the beginning of sometimes even just wanting to be heard. To give an example, in the early days, when we used to Sunday feast, generally the devotees, you know, they're encouraged not to just sit down and eat and sit in little groups, but every devotee sat with another group of new people. And usually you had, if there were two devotees, one was always singing and one was junior. And the senior devotee spoke and the junior devotee listened. And that's a good way of uprooting that desire, because when we come to Krishna consciousness, we're basically coming off the street and we have a there's a desire that my opinion is very important and I am very knowledgeable and everyone should hear what I've got to say. And when you've got to sit there and just quietly and you keep thinking, oh, I've got something to say now. But in those days, of course, you might say something, and even if it's correct, the older devotee would just sort of turn and look at you, and then just go on talking. So you just, you kept quiet. And then, the older devotee would occasionally, when the subject was a little appropriate, they would give a bit of a nod to the younger devotee to have a little say. Something that was I see this a lot, that if an older devotee is talking, that the younger devotees, literally influenced by this, will actually just talk over the top of the older devotee, and almost unstoppable. It actually goes on quite a lot. You'll see it quite a lot still, and that's a symptom of that. That when the mood of service is there, it's let's somehow get the message of Krishna consciousness as best as we can to this conditioned soul, and certainly whoever's most expert, let them have the opportunity, because then they've got the best chance of somehow entering into the heart of this conditioned soul. But if that motive is not there, and it's just, please, hear me, hear what I've got to say. I've read this, and I know this, and that. So that can be there, surprising. Another way I've seen that manifest is the way devotees preach. I was once sitting with a couple of new people who had come. I was just very gently just answering a few questions, and there was a young devotee with me, and again I had a lot of trouble to stop her from talking. She would just talk over the top. It's very difficult because you're with guests and you can't say, "Can you be quiet, please?" So you sort of, because that gives the wrong impression, then people think, what's going on here? But anyway, some of the things that she was saying were, long descriptions of the austerities that, we perform as devotees. We get up early in the morning, we do this and we do that. And, it was more, a sense of, we are just, very elevated, very austere, you should admire us for, our austerities and the wonderful things and how much we know and everything like that. It was sort of, but none of it was necessary for that person to know. In fact, it was better that, for a new person, you don't discuss all these things. I remember when the first night I joined, I came back with a kirtan page, and I sat down with a Mai Swami, and I'd actually read the Nectar Devotion before I was a devotee, and I'd read the Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, I sat down with him, and I said, "Do you guys take cold showers?" He goes, "Oh, some do." And I was happy with that. The next day, of course, they left on the bus, and he asked me if I'd like to come with them, and we travelled from Melbourne to Perth. And of course, on a bath with no showers. And we spent a couple of weeks in an old bus and travelled across to Nullarbor. So we used to get up at 3:30, 4 in the morning, have a cold bucket bath in the middle of the desert. But had he sat there and said that that was what was in store for him, I don't know what my reaction is, because you take cold baths. I just wanted to, how much hysteria is involved here, sort of thing. But he played it right then and just, when the time comes and they've had more of an opportunity to explain to you the importance of, performing austerity. If you tell someone about austerity before they understand the purpose of austerity and the benefits of it, they'll run away scared. If you ask someone to do austerity and you've had time to explain it over a few days, a few weeks, they might accept it. So that can come up in preaching. Look at the wonderful thing that we're doing. And it's sort of boasting to new devotees and the name and fame and talking over the top of old devotees wanting to be heard. Things like that. So actually, you'll be surprised, it does go on a lot. I see it a lot, especially in the younger devotees. But if the younger devotees don't get trained in the nectar devotion, you'll find that even devotees who have been around for 10, 15 years are still doing this. Thanks.
If they're going out preaching to new people, don't you think they should first be trained before they go out and you kind of are in that kind of situation?
Exactly. Therefore, they should be here at the Bhakti Shastri. That's my point exactly. All right, so we'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Just pick up the next couple of questions. It's probably better just to answer the two content questions. They're the most important. And to read chapter one. And we'll see you next Thursday. What's that?
Seven fifteen.
Because some devotees want to come at 7 and some want to say 7:30. So I think 7:15.